put something on the overhead here on the PowerPoint, TV, whatever we've got in here now, that will spur our thought for a moment. I hope you can see that well enough to see what it is. I am told that they no longer teach cursive writing in the schools. Does anybody know that for certain? That's what I've been... Pardon?
They're bringing it back. It's not in the Common Core, but Alabama has put it back in their Common Core.
I'm glad to hear that. There's just something about someone who has a beautiful handwriting. I do not. Mine, if it was ever good, I lost it somewhere along the way.
In a shovel.
And
I did.
Now, Teresa has a nice handwriting, and there are people who have very nice cursive handwriting. Well, I put this up here just to say, some of you, especially if you're my age or older, may remember this, but I remember when I was in elementary school, we had sessions in learning how to write in cursive. And about once a week, there was this black and white television show came on Channel 10 on PBS, and this lady would teach us, you know, she'd get on there and teach. And we had to buy these little notebooks. And those notebooks, the pages looked like this, okay? They had along the top line, as you see up here on the television, on the top line it had the perfect script. And then underneath it had all of these lines where you would practice. And so she would get on there and on the television. I can just see her and I can just hear her. You know, she'd make those letters, you know, and do them real slow and real eloquent and real neat. And of course, mine looked anything but that. But practice. We had those lines underneath. We had the perfect example at the top, and then those lines underneath where you practiced. There's a Greek word. Tie this into our lesson this morning, okay? There's a Greek word for this. And that word is hupogrammos. Hupogrammos describes what we're talking about here. The two words here that you might recognize if you separated this, hupo means under, and grammas in the Greek, what does that kind of look like in our word? Grammar. Well, in the Greek, grammas here was writing or to describe something. So it's very close to what we would think of as far as grammar. But hupogrammos really means under writing. And this word right here actually meant exactly what we're talking about here. It was learning how to write following an example. You would have the perfect example at the top, and then you would learn how to do that by practicing underneath. Now, I'll say something that I'll come back here and refer to in a moment. None of our writing underneath ever looked exactly like the example. Just couldn't get it perfect. But because you couldn't get it perfect, I don't recall any of us ever stopping and saying, I'm not doing it anymore. Didn't have that choice, number one, but you didn't give up. You just, that's what it was about. It was practice. Look at 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 21. This word right here, hupogrammos, is actually found in the Greek New Testament one time. And we'll see it in our text here in 1 Peter 2, verse 21. Now, we're going to come back and say something about what we're talking about here in this context of submission. But in particular, verse 21 says, "For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example." There's the word. The word that's translated example is actually the word hupogrammos, underwriting. What we see up here on the screen and what we've talked about on the screen is a perfect analogy of Christ being our example. He's the perfect example, and then we are to work on emulating him. Will we ever get to that perfection? No. But because we can't do it exactly like perfection, do we quit? Hopefully not. Christ is our example that you should follow his steps. Christ is our example. Now, we're talking about submission here. And in particular, last week when we were together, we were talking about submission to masters and that being harsh masters. Easy to be submissive to those who are good, but to those who are the harsh, we're to be submissive to those. And again, here we've got that Christ is our example, that we should follow in his steps. Now think about the follow in his steps a minute. I heard a true story a long time ago about a military situation where a lieutenant was commanding his troops, and they went out and they put a bunch of landmines around where they were stationed to keep the enemy at bay. So they had all these landmines out there, for that. They knew where they were. The enemy didn't. That was the whole point. Well, they went out away from their camp there to engage the enemy, and they were pinned down overnight. And during the night, it came a snow. So that the next day, when they had to get back, true story, the next day when they had to get back to their camp, they couldn't see where the landmines were. And so the lieutenant, being the leader, he went first. And he carefully picked his way as best he could through that snow. And he made it all the way. But what he instructed his people to do were to follow my steps. You follow my steps. And he was safe. And in doing that, see, they followed his steps and they were safe. Bypassing all of those landmines. I can't help but think of that every time I read 1 Peter 2:21. Christ is our hupogrammus, that we should follow his steps. That's what we need to be doing, following his steps. Now, let's look here and talk just a little bit about the example that he set. Beginning in verse 22, it says, "Who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth, who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously." The text says, in this context of talking about submission to government, submission to masters, which we would parallel with our maybe employer relationship, submission. Christ has given us the perfect example that we should follow his steps. And then note what it said. Observe our example here. There are five things that said of Christ. It says, no sin. It says, no deceit. No reviling when reviled. No threats. And then finally, but rather committed himself to God. So in this short verse here, it gives you five different things here. Christ is our perfect example. No sin, no deceit, no reviling when reviled, no threats, but rather committed himself to God. Now go back to our previous example here of the riding. Christ is the perfect example. Will we ever reach a point where we can meet what you see on the board with no sin? No. Not this side of eternity. Or no deceit. Or being able to completely, perfectly, every time we're reviled, we don't revile in return. No threat. We can't meet that perfection. But because we can't meet perfection, doesn't mean that we don't keep trying. And that's the whole point here. And then we finish up chapter 2 here by saying, verse 24, "Who himself bore our sins in his own body on the tree, that we, having died to sins, might live for righteousness, by whose stripes you were healed. For you were like sheep going astray, but have now returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls." There's three words in the Greek that's used to describe elders. Two of them are used here in describing the Lord as being the chief shepherd. Those Greek words are presbyteros, which means elder. And then you have what's translated shepherd here, poimen. Poimen, shepherd, has to do with feeding and caring for the flock, nurturing the flock. And then overseer is the word episkopos. We've talked about those before, but two of those words here are used in this text referring to the chief shepherd. Any comments about the two sections here that we've spent some time with in chapter 2, specifically about submission to government or submission to masters? Any comments or questions about that before we move on? We've got one more section on submission here as we enter chapter 3. Well, okay. Well, let's do that. Let's look at the next section. Submission in the home. When we come to chapter 3 here of 1 Peter, this is a section that really seems out of place at first. Because we've been talking about submission to government, and we're talking about the workplace, and then all of a sudden here we have a section that seems to be on marriage, and it really is. But in the context here, it fits in. We had submission to government, we had submission to masters, we've got submission in the home here. We're going to deal with the husband here in chapter 3 as well. And then we also have another situation later in chapter 3 about Christians in general being submissive in unfair situations. And we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But let's talk about submission here in the home in verses 1 through 6. Now, we could spend a lot of time about this, and in the past we have, when we talked about the marriage relationship. We could spend a lot of time on the home here, and on the wife's role and attitude, and on the husband's role and attitude. And that's not our intent today. We're talking about this under the context of submission. We'll try to keep it in those general terms. But I will say this. Some men have taken what we find here in these verses and taken that to the extreme, placing the wife in a subservient, cowarding position. I've known of that. A real heavy hand in the relationship, and that's not scriptural. That's not scriptural. But most of the time, it's unfortunate to say, you don't see that in our society. At least this is my observation. More than finding the men taking control too much today, you find them in the other extreme, where the men are not taking their rightful place as head of the family. And I've often said, still believe, that in a lot of cases when you find the woman out of her place in the home, in the marriage relationship, it's really the man's fault. If he won't take the leadership, sometimes she has to. Sometimes our families are matriarchal by necessity because the men won't take their role in that. So I don't want us to spend too much time in that. But we're working our way through a contextual study here of 1 Peter chapter 3. And so I want us to talk about this. Submission in the home. I'm going to look at the first two verses here, and I'm going to put this under the general heading of purity and reverence in your lives. So let's read the two verses and make some comments. Wives, likewise, on the heels of this discussion we've been having about submission to government and master slaves, wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. It's interesting. I got to thinking about this as I looked at it. Be submissive to your own husbands. And I went back and looked at the original Greek, and it's in there. I don't really know what meaning that has other than to, I guess, say you wives, you're not to be submissive to other husbands, just your own. But it's very specific. Be submissive to your own husbands. And then, again, that carries us back to the idea of the man, by God's design, is to be the head of the household. And I just feel like that a lot of the men are letting our wives down by not taking our rightful place there in the home. How many of you have this in your scripture? That if any obey not the word, they without the word may be one. I'm emphasizing the. If you've got an original King James, and perhaps it may be that way in others. Does the American Standard have the in both of them?
No.
That's interesting. And I think there's what I read from the New King James is a better translation there. Because it says, if any do not obey the word, we're talking about a wife, a believing Christian wife, living with an unbelieving husband. That's the situation we're dealing with. And it says, wives, you be submissive to your own husbands, that if some do not obey the word, if some do not obey the word, then let's finish it. They without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives. What are we talking about there?
She's setting an example for him. An
example of behavior.
She sets the example for him without nagging and without badgering him with the word. He hadn't come to the truth yet. He hasn't obeyed the truth. He hasn't obeyed the word. So without the word, she can lead him. She can influence him without a word by her life. That's the reason I've put the purity and reverence in your lives here. Because if you go ahead and finish it down here, when they observe, verse 2 says, when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. Most of the other translations have something like what you see on the board. And as a matter of fact, I got this from the NIV. I'm not a fan of the NIV. You know that from times past. But in this particular case, I like that rendering. The NIV says, when they see the purity and reverence of your lives. Now, I got one more comment I want to make here, and it's to the point C. The King James Version says, when they behold. The New King James Version says, when they observe. We made this comment back in chapter 2 on verse 12 when it says, by your good works which they observe. King James says, behold. New International Version says, see. The idea there, though, has more than just a casual glance. It's over time. So, these husbands who are not believing, a faithful wife can have an influence over them, but it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to be over the long haul rather than just a casual glance. It's not a one-time thing. They're going to observe your purity, and they're going to observe your reverence over the long haul, and they can be influenced. I can't help but remember this dear family in Double Springs. She was my second grade teacher, and I thought the world of her, and I remember some things. I've mentioned her name, I think, in this class before. She was a faithful Christian woman, and her husband was an unbeliever for their whole life, and she lived that Christian life in front of him until they were gray-headed. And he came to the Lord. But it didn't happen overnight. He was a faithful Christian for several years at the end of his life. And died a faithful Christian. But I can't help but picture her when I read about influencing without a word. Just purity and reverence that they observe over the long haul. Michael, do you have a comment?
I had an uncle named Charlie. And he was, his wife always went to, her name is my aunt Hazel. She goes to up there to East Walker. She's been gone for years, always just faithful. We prayed and prayed and prayed, and he died about a year ago. 2 years before that, he was baptized.
How about that?
He's about 81 when he was baptized.
How about that? Well,
That does happen.
That's perfect. A perfect example of what we're talking about here in verses 1 and 2. Let's move on to verse 3 and 4. And here I say, watch your adornment and your attitude. Read verse 3 and 4. Do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, or putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of the Lord. This is just a general principle that we found discussed by Paul over in 1 Timothy 2, verse 9 and 10, when it doesn't really prohibit the woman from wearing, from fixing her hair and from wearing gold and that sort of thing, but it talks about the motive. It talks about your inner spirit, which is what we find here in verse 4. The beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit. So watch your adornment and your attitude toward that. And then lastly here, let's look at verse 5 and 6 to evaluate your objective. For in this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. Now I know you women, there are two things here that's being said that just irks you. Obeyed Abraham and called him Lord. But I would just remind you of this. Submission is not easy. Go back to the government situation we dealt with there in chapter 2. Submission to government. When Nero was on the throne, killing your family and friends, be submissive to him. Are you kidding me? That's what the scripture said. Be submissive. Those master-slave relationships or boss-employee relationships, not only to the good, but also to the harsh. That's not easy. And now you come to this situation here where in the home, the wife, back in the garden, after the fall, was put in a submissive relationship situation there. But I just remind you of why we do it. You go back to chapter 2, verse 13, and you read all of those reasons that we talked about before. For the Lord's sake, this is the will of God. We're bondservants, and it's commendable before God. Now, before we leave this and turn our attention toward the husbands, I hear a collective sigh of relief from the wives. I do want to note something in verse 5. Look at the way this woman is described by the Holy Spirit, by God Himself. Holy women who trusted in God. They adorned themselves, back to verse 4, with a gentle and quiet spirit, and being submissive to their own husbands. That's how that godly woman is described by the Holy Spirit. And then here's the ultimate goal in verse 6. As Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are, if you do good and are not afraid with any terror. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Remember that Sarah deceived him when she took her part between the two boys.
Say again then? Oh, yes. I got you.
And that doesn't seem like it fits right there. But we can be forgiven.
Overall statement.
Right.
Is that overall statement?
Well, and back to the idea of being the head of the family. Wasn't that what God said about Abraham himself in Genesis 18 and 19 when God said, "For I know him that he will command his household, command his children and his household will follow him." Didn't God himself say that Abraham, now that there may be isolated instances, but the overall, as Steve said, the overall picture there is one with a man in his rightful place as being the head of the home.
There's going to be lapses.
Yeah.
That's human nature.
Well,
and that's why it's hard.
I really, it's hard for me to keep from getting too much into that marriage relationship now, but I want us to keep this in the context of our study here. Let's turn our attention to the husband in verse 7. Wives, you had 6 verses. Husbands, you get 1. But there's a lot of stuff in that 1, as you will see. Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. Why 6 verses to the wife and only 1 to the husband? Some say it's because the wife's position is 6 times more difficult than the husband's. But I will truthfully say this. Now we're talking generalities. I know there's exceptions to this. But if a husband comes to a knowledge of the truth, his wife will very likely follow him. Very likely. That's not necessarily true in the short term if a wife does. That husband, the position that God's placed him in, just seems to have the spiritual influence if he would choose to take it. Okay. The verse I just read to the husband, I'm going to give you 6 things. There's 6 points in this one very, very short verse here. 6 of them. Dwell, discernment, devotion, delicacy, distinction, and danger. So I told you there's a lot here for you, for the men. Husbands likewise dwell with them. The ESV says, simply live with your wife. Well, everybody would say, I do. I fit that. I live with my wife. I dwell with my wife. A whole lot more involved than just having the same address, sharing the same house. The phrase dwell with is found nowhere else in Scripture. And it means much more than companionship. It means much more than cohabitation. It carries with it the idea of completeness. If you go back to the garden, when God saw man and saw that he was alone and saw that it was not good, he created woman to complement him. Some people say to complete him, and I don't know that I really like the idea of completing him as much as I like the idea of complementing him. They go together. They go together. And I like Berkeley's translation of Genesis 2:18 there when it says, a suitable helper completing him. The roles of men and women are very different. They complete or they complement, whatever you choose there, but they complement one another. Let's look to the second part, discernment. Dwell with them. Now here's the kicker. With understanding. Dwell with them with understanding. And again, most of you husbands would say, hey, I do. I dwell with them with understanding. But do you really? Do you know your wife? Knowing her means knowing things that other people don't know. Test time for you husbands. Wives, get ready. You can do some gouging here, okay? I'm going to ask you 5 questions, husbands. Do you know the last article of clothing she bought for herself?
Oh, it happened yesterday.
It's Mother's Day.
Okay, I'm giving you a little question here, a little test to see. Dwell with her with understanding. Know her. Do you know the last article of clothing she bought for herself? Do you know her favorite flower? Her favorite season? Her favorite color? Her favorite movie? Do you know the name of a childhood pet of hers? Fourthly, do you know her best friend in elementary school?
Bill Gates.
And then lastly, let me ask this question. Lastly, do you know the name of the most influential woman in her life? And this list, of course, could go on ad infinitum. Long list of things that would illustrate the fact that to dwell with understanding means we husbands need to know our wives. And you know, you get to know that through the years living with your wife. If you're listening, and if you have those good communication skills, you can talk about these things. But to know her calls for a sensitive, caring spirit. Now, I'll tell you something that I'm trying hard to break. I've been married 37 years. I'm trying hard to break this, okay? When my wife tells me something's wrong, my tendency is to fix it. I begin immediately telling her what needs to be done or what I would do or this sort of thing. I mean, that's just my nature, and probably a lot of men. I'm working hard on that. I've got an answer. Most of the time. I've got a solution most of the time. But I need to wait on her to ask me that. Because sometimes, in fact, most of the time, when the women are talking about things, what do they want us to do? Well, let's don't go that far. What do they want us to do? They just want us to listen. It's taken me a long time to come to that conclusion. But sometimes when they talk, they just want us to listen. They don't want us to spout off what we would do or what needs to be done or what should have been done or fix the problem. They just want us to listen. That goes back to the idea of being... Pardon me?
I've been here since back to the
Adrian, you listen with your ears, but you know what else you listen with? You listen with your eyes, too. That's right. Adrian's made a good point there in jest, but put down what you're doing and look at them and be tuned into them and be caring about, have that sensitive spirit, and sometimes that comes easier for some men than it does for some of us. But you have to nurture that, and you have to work on that. You have to come in over here.
Sister Johnson, and if he didn't tell the men, they have three sons. And the middle one is a songwriter. And he's now married, and he's had a wife a while, and he wrote a song, and she played it for us Saturday. And he pretty much says, I don't understand, but I can hold you.
Yeah. Well, again, sometimes, you know, all I want to do is just listen. As a matter of fact, do you know what the number one desire of a woman is, guys? You women can tell me probably. But the number one desire of a woman is to be understood. To be understood. And that takes time and that takes effort from a man. Tony, you had a comment.
I just want to say I've been with somebody that really, I really like somebody who does. So, you know, I've got to tell somebody sometimes that we do something instead of just listening.
Okay. Well, there comes a time when you got to act. My point, if I think you understand, is that Teresa wants me to do something. She'll, you know, I can understand sometimes when, but my nature is when she starts describing, and this happened. This happened all the time when we were in the classrooms. You know, we'd come home, and my classroom management style, as you probably would guess, was very military. You know, here it is. And there wasn't any doubt who was going to be in control of the classroom and that sort of thing. Well, Teresa's is not that way. She's a different personality. And she would come home, and she would start telling me about, you know, some problem she had with some rabble-rouser in school that day. Alan, they have those down at Hillcrest, when she was at Hillcrest. And my, you know, I'd immediately, well, this is what you need to do. I do this right here, I do that. Don't you let him talk to you that way, and you need to do this right here. And I just lay it out there and spout it out. Well, number one, she wasn't really asking for that. Number two, it wasn't going to work for her anyway because that wasn't her personality. But the point being, just needed to listen. Just needed to listen. Let's look at the next phrase here. Dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife. You know what the word honor here in the Greek means? It means weighty. It means weighty. What does that mean, you think, suppose? Give honor, weighty. Give honor to the wife. Here's what I think. I think it means that what she says needs to carry weight with me. It's important to me what she thinks. What she says carries some weight. That's honor.
My side door says with intelligence.
With intelligence. Interesting. Okay, back to the TV. Okay, guys. Want to know how you can give honor to your wife? In the sense of David Letterman here, I'm going to give you 10 ways, okay? 10 ways to show honor to your wife. Number one, praise her publicly. Praise her publicly.
And don't lie.
Praise her publicly, Adrian. Praise her publicly. You know, it's sad to me. It's sad to me when I hear a husband cutting down his wife in the presence of others in public.
Glenn, he's really cutting himself down. He really is making a choice.
He really is. He really is. I can say this. Teresa and I have had our problems just like every married couple has through the years. I never, ever went home to my parents and talked negatively about her. Never shared any of that with my parents. Publicly, period. Billy said, you know, if I started talking about her, really cutting myself down a little bit because we're one, you know. Praise her publicly. Number two, say thank you often. Say thank you often. Number three, open doors for her. Chivalry's not dead. Open doors for her. Number four, wait on her. I started to put this last word in italics. Joyfully. Guys, look, listen. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you do it joyfully or not. It doesn't change the fact that you're waiting. It's going to change the next few hours or days or whatever greatly on your attitude about whether you're waiting or not. But wait on her. We're late getting ready to go to church, and I've got to get there, and I've got my PowerPoint to set up, and I've got my lesson, I've got something I need to run off before I get there, and you know, this, that, and the other, and we're late. Of all days for us to be late, we're late. I can be upset about that, and I can get frustrated about that. Is it going to get us here any earlier? Not. Wait on her joyfully. And number five, wait on her patiently. Now, I'm not saying if you're late to church every day, every Sunday, there might not be a chance for you to sit down and have a conversation about, hey, let's get started a little earlier and, you know, let's do this or that so that we're not walking in 10 minutes after class begins every single week. That's not what I'm saying. But when it's happening, you might as well do it joyfully and you might as well do it patiently. Number six, seek her opinion. That's where really I was going with the idea of honor, meaning weighty. Honor your wife. What she thinks matters to me. Now, I'm not going to do it every time. You know, I've got a mind of my own. But it's important to me. Teresa and I have had the... She'd kill me if she knew I'm going to share this. We have had one of the biggest conflicts over the last year that we probably have ever had. We've always just been able to talk, and you know what it's about? It's about our driveway. It's about our driveway. Because we live on a hill, and there's water, tremendous amount of water comes off that hill. And I really don't care that much about what that driveway looks like. I just want it to handle that water when it comes barreling down the side of that hill. Teresa, on the other hand, she really don't care about that functionality. What do you think she's cared about? How it looks. I can't tell you how many discussions we've had about this, and Kim, you can tell Wesley that we're still working on it. He's been out there helping me, you know, and got the asphalt on it and stuff, but her opinion is important to me. And she might not think so sometimes, but I said, look, I've got to deal with the functionality because I know what's happening when it rains hard. I know where that water's going. It's got a mind of its own, and I know what's going to happen to it. But it is important to me that she's happy about it as well. As a matter of fact, she asked me one day, she said, well, what do you want? I said, I want, when we get this done, I want you to be happy with it. I do. That's what I want. But along with that, I got to handle that water too as well. So that's the biggest conflict I believe we've had in years as we talk about that, what it looks like versus what it needs to do. And there's got to be a happy medium in there somewhere. Seek her opinion. Number 7, take her advice. I see the wisdom in God requiring an elder to be married. Do you, Billy?
Oh, yes.
Allie? So much, because a woman just has a different perspective of looking at things. I'm going to give you these last 3 right here real quick. But so much, so many times, it's good to hear that woman's perspective. Number 8, respect her feelings. Number 9, bring her a gift. I'd like for us to talk about the 5 love languages here. Maybe we can one day when we're talking about husbands and wives. And number 10, guys, if you don't get any of the rest of them, listen, listen, listen. We'll pick up here. We'll pick up here in verse 7 with a few more comments about the husbands next week.
I get in trouble for listening.
And don't blame her.
Hey.
What was number 5?
Hey, Joe,
put this on
there. Wait on the patient. Yeah. Thank you.
No, where's she?
And your dog, you guys found it?
Yes, he showed up. Well, I woke up at 3 this morning, went out and looked again. I hadn't been out there. Went out again
good
at 6.
Dog.
And he come tearing down the hill. But me and him took a little walk around the backyard and up in the very tip-top corner of our property where the fences meet. Like that, and how he gets through there. But I put my hand on the other side and snapped it, and that's where it works. So, but you know, I dreamed about that dog last night. I was
Did
so worried
you?
About him.
Well, I saw your thing on Facebook, and I thought, oh,
I'm so worried about that pup.
I'm hoping you're going to get more meds. I'll tell you what, I'm taking more than what I want right now. So.
They're going to come to church. Somebody suggested to put them in your
place. I have them in here from probably 25 years old to 75 years old.
of theirs.
So they'll fit.
In the late 20s, I
guess. Oh, they'll fit right in.
They've already finished pharmacy school. They just got to do their internship and then go back and graduate.
Yeah, we'll be happy to have
him. Okay.
We got plenty of
His name's Hunter Collins.
Okay.
And her name's Ashley. And they'll be starting a church here either. I thought it might be this Sunday, but I guess it's going to be next Sunday.
You mentioned in class the other day, wasn't it?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Thought so. Good deal. Gotcha.
I don't think we got number one in the bulletin. That's my fault. The parents with the birth through the K children. That meeting this afternoon.
What he's saying right there.
Right. I think we got that in the bulletin.
Maybe
right.
In there, but I don't
know. Yeah, I did not see that. I did not see it. Neely and I have already been talking about it.
So anyways.
Okay.
It's Glenn, you know,